السؤال ده members from the media, staff members, Shireen Nopala. I propose that we start the meeting. Our apologies again today for starting a bit late. I'm told the minister was held up somewhere. We've got only one item in our agenda. I think today's presentation is going to give us a highlight or a guideline on hearing how is the department going to approach what has been said by the President of the State of the Nation address, and maybe to hear their take on some issues that have been raised today. Hope members in putting in our questions will also give us a guideline on how to advance our policies that guide us on our progress. Without any waste of time, members, I'll give over to the minister maybe to introduce the DG and then get into the presentation.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thanks to one of the members of the portfolio committee. With me, I have Professor Mwaila, who is the DG responsible for traditional affairs. Mr. Ricardo Hansby, who is the DDG responsible for economic development, is also going to join us. It is for one of the my apologies, Chair, for coming late without seeking to justify that. We had two sessions this morning. The first one, we were requested by the Portfolio Committee on Energy to address them on issues related to the electricity distribution industry changes. How far the issues are and how we deal with issues related to municipal infrastructure and stuff like that. It's something that we received a notice late, and because chairs have indicated it would have been proper also to have the portfolio committee represented there. But what we can commit to do is that the issue of the EDI, as we all know, that we reached a point where that was put on hold, and the holding company de-established. We may want to give progress in terms of that going forward at a later stage. The other thing we had to address Judge Ritty of the commission that's responsible for the remuneration of public officials, including traditional leaders. When we come to some of the issues in here, we will advantage this portfolio committee in terms of the issues that are arising there. The presentation is so structured or outlined to address itself to the purpose and talk about COPTA response to the 2012 State of the Nation address. It's not a good thing, Chair, to keep on apologizing for one and the same thing. Last time we indicated that circulation of our presentations will be done in time, and we committed to say it will not happen again. This time around, the circulation that was sent through, if it found its way to the broader portfolio committee component, there are sections of that may not have served a good purpose, more especially where in that submission there is also a reflection in terms of the ruling parties mind of the ruling party, is fine. So if it doesn't serve a purpose, honestly speaking, it was not intended. That was a very, very, very rough in trying to meet the deadline of submitting before, even before my eyes dropped on that presentation, the official sent it through. So we have a cleaned one, which would have taken out anything that may be identified as being unrelated. As we all know, in a chair, the president gave his State of the Nation address, and as we know that after that we had responses in terms of the debate on that. As we are here is to look at what we think through the eyes of COCTA's mandate. Where do we see ourselves? What are the issues that arise from the 2012 State of the Nation address? We have indicated, as you might recall, honorable members, that for the infrastructure development program, which is at the center of the State of the Nation address, the triple challenges identified there of unemployment, inequality, and poverty, they exist at the local level. And because they exist at the local level, that is the area of our primary interest. So we see ourselves then saying that for all those to happen, so that the people at the local level at the end of the day celebrate and say, yes, this is for us, we appreciate. Or if the people at the local area then say, no, we think that it's not addressing our issue. That is at that particular level. For the success of the rollout of the infrastructure development program, cooperative governance comes to be at the center. Because it is through cooperative governance that we are then saying national departments, provincial departments, should converge and provide support to the local area by empowering the municipalities to be in a position to deliver, by also empowering our traditional affairs to be on board. So what we are seeing there on the first issues after our response is that our mandate is to create an environment for the reduction of unemployment, eradication of inequality and poverty in our communities through dedicated and targeted programs. That talks to what I indicated, that the triple challenges find themselves at that level. Now, we then see through the community work program, as we know that we had a target and we reached our target over 90,000 CWP programs rolled out, and we're aiming that by 2014, we're looking at 250,000 employment opportunities created by that. Now, when you talk about that, you are then seeing, you look at the contribution. So it's a contribution in terms of what we do, but it's also a contribution in terms of what we do to influence others to be on board. Now, we referred earlier, I mean at some stage, to the upscaling of this figure. What we are reporting on here is what is as per the existing budget at the moment. The upscaling, there are further commitments that at a point in time we are going to talk to. We have identified as part of the local government turnaround strategy, implementation strategy. As you remember, honorable members, at our last meeting, that we then say we targeted 100 municipalities. That would then say that becomes a minimum in terms of us then saying this is what we need to do. Of course, in the area around the empowerment of the institution of traditional rule or traditional affairs in general. The issue around the finalization of the traditional courts bill, which the Department of Justice is handling, is something that we need to look at. I saw in the Mail and Guardian of today, I went there, I just saw they had civil society formations saying that this bill is out of place. It will be interesting to read on that one and then see as to what they are saying. But the issue is the traditional courts bill. Justice Department is leading that, and we are working closely with them. It is their mandate. It affects the area that we deal with, so it's necessary that we look at this thing. The issue being that the further transformation of traditional leaders and institutions to empower them includes talking to them in terms of the power that they think they inherit, and also talking to them in terms of what they think in areas where they have a jurisdiction to preside over cases. You actually need them to operate and guide them by a piece of legislation so that it doesn't become a rule of a thumb to pronounce on a judgment at the traditional courts area. We are also saying, as it appears in the State of the Nation address, we are dealing with the Traditional Affairs Bill, and this bill, amongst others, will strengthen and find expression and locate the issues around the Khoisan community, as the Sona referred to. The Traditional Affairs Bill, as you remember, it's meant to reflect on the Traditional Leadership and Governance Framework Act, to look at the act that governs the houses of traditional leaders, to also pronounce in that regard in as far as the issues around the local houses. But it also deals with the situation of addressing questions of remuneration, because it makes a proposal for an input for for legislative amendments in the act that empowers and establishes the commission that's responsible for that. And also the Municipal Structures Act. So that is called Traditional Affairs Bill, which we are looking at tabling in Parliament as per the process map that we shared with the Portfolio Committee of saying we're looking at July. Somebody said when I was delivering my speech, I said June. So if that is the case, I can't say I'll check the answer. I take them for what they say. I read June, but I have written July. So it's not an amendment to the program that we introduced to the Portfolio Committee. If that has happened, it's what we may say is a slip of a tongue. That is the situation. That's why we indicate that we still have to deal with it. Of course, we need to look at issues around working closely with the Department of Rural Development to finalize issues around what is abbreviated as SPLAMP, which has to do with Spatial Planning and Land Use Management Bill. You remember that there is an act, if I'm not mistaken, it's a 1995 Development Facilitation Act, which was challenged. And then the constitutional challenge imposed the responsibility on those responsible to review the act. This piece of legislation, the bill, which Rural Development and Land Affairs Department is leading, is actually meant to address that one, taking forward the objectives that we set to achieve through the Development Facilitation Act. We are dealing with this matter, working closely with the sure if it's mentioned elsewhere, it was supposed to have been mentioned on this slide, is also the issues around LARA, a Communal Land Rights Act. As we know that this is also a piece of legislation that had a constitutional challenge, and the Department of Rural Development is dealing with that, and we're working closely with them. As you'll remember that the SONA is centrally about infrastructure development. That opportunity then also gives us, as COSTA, an opportunity to reflect in terms of our own infrastructure development program. MISA, which is the Municipal Infrastructure Support Agent, like we indicated, is in the process of being finalized. And once it is finalized, it will go into operate as a special purpose vehicle, which is referred to as a government component. As you remember that we took a decision when we amended the Public Service Act in 2008 to then suggest that government components may be established by departments to deal with specialized functions, where the departments that so create them exist as principal departments. We are actually working on that. There, we're also giving some details in terms of what is happening at the moment. When we talk about this question, at the day chair that I indicated that informed by our engagement with Energy Portfolio Committee this morning, we then remember that, you know, when the EDI was in process, more especially when it comes to infrastructure that have to do with electricity supply, we had engineers and who have been actually dealing with it. And when the EDI process was like halted, as we took forward the issue of MISA, the question of picking up the lessons from the EDI became an issue that we're going to actually address. And then, of course, the infrastructure development programs will be included in the integrated development plans. We stress this thing. We stress this thing because the president, having pronounced the State of the Nation address, talking about issues around infrastructure development, its national developed department, its provincial department, in some instances, its private sector that they have to partner with government to make sure that these things happen. But as a requirement, because we know that all these things will happen at the local area, it will be appropriate if in the areas concerned, these development initiatives could be included in the integrated development plans of municipalities. Well, the integrated development plans of municipalities, as it comes across as a product of public participation, is to talk about what is being planned for the government or for delivery in the local area. If you don't include them in the IDP or IDPs, you are running a risk that the community may not know that they are a beneficiary to some of these things that is being raised. And sometimes you find a contradiction. You know, I want to address the community, knowing what was planned to be to be done in that community. And I addressed them because there was a group called Link Itself Consent Committee. The Consent Committee led the community into protest action, even damaging property, over something that was already planned, was in the pipeline of being delivered in the area. But they didn't know, according to them. Now, we then see through the IDPs, because for us, the IDP should not be a consultant activity. You know, the IDP should not be talking about the heads or the people. The people should be understanding. In some instances, you find situations where IDPs will be consultant-driven issues. and shout non-delivery, she should also know that we occupy the space, firstly through our assistance. You do that as an act of empowering the local communities, and that then is what COGTA is supposed to do. And it won't come as a state of readiness of municipalities only, but it will also come as a state of readiness of sector departments to also share this information. So that is why we then say it has to deal with it. We're talking about the project of clean cities and towns. We have spoken about what that is all about, turning waste into wealth, supporting the Department of Energy in terms of installation of solar energy power supplies, the Department of pursuing PPPs and stuff like that. You know, the issue around our participation with public enterprises for now will also, if you pick up from what the Minister of Public Enterprises said, debating on SONA, the issue about the safe use of electricity, the economic use of electricity, the issues that we're actually faced with. We've already had an engagement, and look at the role that we're supposed to play. There has to be campaigns that have to be taken forward. We'll be involving Zalga and other partners to make sure that we find ourselves at that space. So that as government, collectively, even when it comes to communicating difficult messages, we must be seen to be one. That's the position that we're looking at. Of course, the infrastructure grant will continue to deal with these issues. You know, when you deal with grants like this, you are compelled to work in partnership with departments concerned. That demands our view that all the deliverables take place at the local area. When it comes to issues about the assessment on provision of basic services to schools, electricity, water, sanitation, and refuse removal, this is also at the center of then saying COGTA is not all about local government, but COGTA is all about intergovernmental relations. It's all about cooperative governance, and cooperative governance is all about support. How do we support each other? We support each other around our respective mandates. To then say, what is it that you are doing at the local level? Now, here, we want then to talk about interventions as part of cooperative governance. You know, when you speak of cooperative governance and you say it's all about support, even when at municipality level, you go to a point of supporting a municipality by placing them under Section 139, it remains support. It is not a negative thing. It is then to say that is to assist one another in such a way that we remain alive and ready to discharge our mandate according to our areas of responsibility. So in here, we are talking about Section 139, and also to talk about Section 100. That is when it comes to provinces. Here we are seeing, as of now, on Section 139, there are only two local municipalities that are still under Section 139 intervention. What to indicate here, so that there is no reading in between the lines that suggests contradictions between what we are saying now and what we said at the last portfolio committee. Because at the last portfolio committee, we said we'll come to before the portfolio committee to then see municipalities that have been put under Section 139. How far have we gone? A detailed analysis in terms of the impact of the assessment. And here we are seeing only two that are still. It's two that are still, but it does not mean that the rest, we have gone over it technically to the conclusion in terms of the reasons why they were put under Section 139. It's a question of a technicality that you can't place a municipality under Section 139 beyond the term. Once the term come to an end, you go for elections, automatically the intervention find a place and get part. But have we achieved? Because for us, it's not all about individual councillors that are there. For us, it's the ability of the council to deliver in terms of what is expected of it. So we'll still come because we're assessing in terms of the impact of some of those things. Already, you'll have the information like when we debated in the SONA, we reflected on one municipality in the Eastern Cape, where we got detailed report that shows that all the reasons that were identified justifying the placement of that municipality under Section 139 have been attended to. One, to come forward before you and indicate as to how we deal with these issues in as far as the other, so that a technicality does not become a shield for continuing in a state of being unable to provide, but without assistance that comes in the form of Section 139. They were also talking about issues about that municipality, the Sandys River. It's indicated there. Sandys River Valley. Of course, we talk of the interventions in the provinces placed by national government. You will ask yourself, but why are we raising these things? Do we think that we've got space in this area? Obviously, in as far as the mechanisms of engaging and stuff like that, providing that support, COCTA has to be understood as that vehicle for cooperative governance, it will then say that is one area that firstly want to say it is an act to deal with issues around cooperative governance. Between this point, that one is okay, the issues around the corruption, the issue that we then see we need to address. In fact, linking SONA in terms of what SONA said to us and linking the response by COCTA in terms of what we set ourselves to do, we indicated that those partners, you know, when we say cooperative governance is the key, we also say that there are players that will be there to assist cooperative governance as we identified them at the last meeting, and that those players must be mobilized into action to deal with issues that have to be done. We also committed that at the center of leading COCTA, we want to see a situation where we will provide this support, the support to the call or the mobilization of the actors to play up to a point as we expect them to do. We repeated, like in the debate, all what we said for the portfolio committee last time, that we want to support municipalities up to a point where all around each municipality will refer to a municipality and say, my municipality, my service, because it will live up to what is expected of it. And we then said, all around a municipality will see about our municipal workers that my municipal worker is my future. And they will see around all trade unions in the municipal environment that my trade union, my partner. And that they will see all of those around there, knowing that we have SALGA, will always say that my SALGA, my collective voice. And we then said, it's not only about municipalities, but it's also about traditional leaders. And our support to such institutions is to actually get them as an actor to a level where all around them will say, my traditional leader or institution, my pride. And we said, all this is possible if you have a COCTA that will be so organized, a COCTA that is ready and equal to the task, that all around COCTA will then be my COCTA, my intergovernmental relations coordinator. therefore then saying that wherever we find ourselves, as COGTA on the executive side, but as COGTA also on the legislative side, to then say, as you do play your oversight role, providing support to all these entities, we suggest that we should only stop at that level where we're provided. And we're doing all this in response to what we sloganize as we commit ourselves to then say, my community is my call. That is, we're going to make sure that as we mobilize these players in cooperative governance, we mobilize them not to work for themselves, but we mobilize them to be in action to respond to the call of the community. We then said as a priority, accelerating service delivery is a priority. Fighting corruption and making sure that as we do that, we sharpen our intervention mechanism. Those are the things that, some of the things that we raised, that we need to do. So in short, this is what we then see as we plan, as we act, as we draw our intervention mechanisms, as we mobilize actors, we'll be mobilizing actors to then say, SONAS's infrastructure development is the way to go. In terms of the modus operandi, what we are learning from SONA is to do things the 2010 way. That is projectizing the work that we do, and not just projectize in general terms, but projectize in terms of identifying what must be done, and you list them in time sequence, that this is what you want to do, and you want to do by this time. We provided infrastructure and actually broke the record as we're preparing for 2010. And we then say it became possible. So it can be possible, even when it comes to dealing with these things. The message is if we provide that support. The operating slogan, cooperative governance. The destiny, servicing the local area, that we realize what we set for ourselves, better life for all. Thank you.
Thanks, Minister. Members, here is a brief presentation, which is a response from the SONA 2012, which mainly highlighted the triple challenges that the President mentioned: unemployment, inequality, and poverty. The Minister has highlighted in some of the department's programs on how are they going to respond to those triple challenges. For instance, with unemployment, there's already a CWP program which is in place. Maybe some questions will arise from yourself in progress on e-edition, on the response of how has it has been working to provide employment to communities, and how has it assisted the communities. And also there is a response on fast-tracking of some of the legislations that you need. They need to be before the committee for processing, which will be before July, as the Minister has said, which will enable to respond to the President's call to integrate the Khoisan community into governance mainstream. Members, also the Minister has touched a bit on corruption, which is high in the department's agenda. Here's the presentation. Are there any questions? Dr. Machoba, Honorable Boy Nami, Honorable Khalid Zai, Honorable Mamdi Tetelo, Honorable Nelson. In that order, Tata.
Thanks, Chair. Mine is it's not a question, but a comment. Minister, how far are we as COGTA, not as this the PWP of creating the jobs as COGTA? Because we have been asking this for long now. Because what is happening with that department now? I'll go to one department. Because this corruption, it goes with the Ethiopian the public works company of the tender that they are going to get rid of this tendering so that the department must do the job themselves. Now with Cogdenham, we even said now we mentioned Peter Madison, we said now they were privatizing even the clinic of the street. Where now we know that the people who are employed are supposed to come from there. If now we want to rely now on this Peter without creating jobs as Cogdenham, and then we said now we're going to create 250,000. This is not job. It's not work. Then we can't name them an employment. If you want to create 60 rand a day for a person, if maybe we can move, we can say to us, okay, as Cogdenham, we are going to create so that we don't mislead the president. We say we are creating so much of. We want to find this. This is this 60 rand a day job. If maybe we can say we say every. So we should have done by council or by Ms. Martin. There's no more go to somebody go to check into that. The problem is, if you are going to outsource everything now to the private sector, of course the private sector is not employing anybody. It's just giving them 20 rand a day, but it's the money goes to themselves. Thanks, sir.
Thank you, Chairperson. Minister, at the heart of the President's State of the Nation address was the rollout of infrastructure, as you have mentioned, which speaks directly to cooperative governance and traditional affairs. What worries me and perhaps many other South Africans is that there's anarchy displayed during each strike related to service delivery, during which strike the very infrastructure you are talking about is destroyed, and people seem to be getting away with it. And it's a norm that in each and every strike, the buildings should be burned, cars of innocent people passing by should be destroyed, the money is municipality property must be destroyed. This to me undermines the very intention of the government to better the lives of the people by creating jobs. Now, Minister, my question to you is there any intention on your part to pass a bill that holds each and every person who, during such strike, now engage in illegal acts of destroying property? Because striking and destroying property are two different things. People have the right to strike, but they have no right to engage in the destruction of property and assaulting other people. Thank you, Minister.
Honourable Member, Khalid is right.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thanks for the presentation, Minister. When talking about fighting corruption, which in my language, when we say binayatweni, is something that is being said every day, in every corner. But as a my concern is there is really nothing. It seems as if there is really nothing. Can I just cite an example, Minister? Like in the news, when we are here in Northwest, in Rustenburg, there is a court proceeding which is taking place whereby it is alleged that the councillor who's been murdered gave the document to the minister. Now the problem, the former minister, the problem is the department having any defined, well-defined or a known plan or mechanism to really fight this corruption. Because at the end of the day, instead of things coming better, it seems as if things is getting worse. Now, we as the parliamentarians who are doing oversight want to sing from the same hymn, whereby we are saying that there is this plan, there is this mechanism, there is this strategy, which is well defined and well known, whereby when I go wherever, I've got that handbook which really defines how are we going to deal with strategy, with corruption. Or do we go to the municipality or to the department with our views, different views? You go there, you talk this about corruption, the chairperson goes there and talks this about corruption, but at the end of the day, it doesn't come together. My question is, do we have a plan, a defined plan, a known plan? How are we going to deal with this corruption? Because corruption is there and we are all aware. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Mine is just some few comments and I think one or two questions. I would ask the Chair to allow me just to say it once and not come time and again. Thank you, Mr. Minister, for representing COPTA on response by the State of the Nation address. My first comment would be the community workers. You know, in some of the provinces, we have a problem in the getting community workers because most of the, let's say the youth, they reckon that they don't know how these people are doing. Is it politicized or is it well advertised to get this community workers? I loved when I had an interest in what you are saying, that COPTA will try and help in getting this community workers, because more especially in the rural areas, there's a lot of complaining about what has been happening. And the chances of trying to get permanent workers rather than community workers, is there any chance in that? Coming to traditional leaders, I'm from the rural area. In your last meeting, you mentioned that political parties will try to work with others. I have a problem because I don't know how will that work, because whenever anybody who comes from an opposition comes with a valid reason or valid idea of doing that, that's not totally accepted. It's taken as wanting something else than talking it on the wrong platform. I would like you to elaborate on that, because it goes back to the traditional leaders. Some of the traditional leaders have a problem with the community. I'm from a rural small village in the northwest, and some of the youth don't have, I'll have to say it loud and clear, some of the chief traditional leaders, the behavior towards what they are trying to say, trying to do, it's sometimes challenged in a political manner. If you can try and lull that attitude, that would bring working together. To provide support in the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform, the impact would be of great help. Some of the people that we represent are farmers, and there's a lot of corruption in there. I still have a case on that. Genuine, I've got information, everything that concerns my late husband about the corruption in the land reform issue, the granting of funds, and that's not properly done. The MISA, the 94 technical experts and 82 engineers that are deployed. My plea is, can't we try and start with the problematic provinces than deploying them in the provinces that are more well run and not in like the Northwest province, in fact. And the solar energy, that would sound great because some of the people don't even have electricity. If you give them that, and that will be of great help. Mr. Minister, I would congratulate you if 30% of these that have been mentioned by the state president would be done by COPTA, because we have been going on as a department and going on but not existing. And if we can try and have 30% of what you are saying, we will see the light at the end of the tunnel. Thank you.
Thanks, ma'am. I've recognized you and Nelson.
Thanks, Chair. Honourable Minister, I'd like to know how COPTA is going to encourage good intergovernmental relations. Good intergovernmental relations have been coming with us since 94. But how are we going to entrench them? Because that's what we want, but what we're not seeing happening on the ground. We don't even have to take it between municipal and provincial and national. You will find it between your Category B and Category C municipalities as well, especially when you've got municipalities that are high capacity within a district municipality, and you have maybe two low capacity municipalities. You will see that the working relations aren't very good in those municipalities. So I'd like to know how we're going to encourage this good intergovernmental relations. And then, especially in fighting poverty, what is COPTA's relationship with the CETAs? I still maintain, Mr. Minister, that we will be able to reach a large number of our unemployed youth if we use government departments and to place students through the CETA funding back into local government, especially by putting them through scarce skills training, because this is a crisis in local municipalities. The people with no, especially engineering skills, we don't have in municipalities. So is there any way that COPTA can facilitate this, that a program is maybe put into place to ensure that we use local municipalities as a training ground for scarce skills? And then on the MISA, can we maybe be informed where these 94 technical people are going to be, in which municipalities, so that when we, through our oversight visits, or wherever we are placed with around the country, if it happens to be in the area where we are, that we can go into those municipalities and really see what is happening. Thanks, Chairperson.
Honourable member, I've forgotten the surname. Can you please remind me?
The Chair, my question, I think, is very similar to Bonham, Trevor Bonham, similar to his name. Yeah, you know, I was thinking was similar lines of Comrade Nelson. You know, I was deployed in the provincial government for about a year or so. And the programs they've got, it seems like, you know, that there should be overlapping and duplication. You know, and how do you prevent that kind of duplication?
If there are no questions, I would like members to add some that they can come in.
Mine is straight now, which is just to add to my colleague, Big Enamo. No, that. No. The minister of the Tobi State, we were doing an oversight, a bit relief, on a way to KZN. They were banned a library there. It was banned to come down. 2 weeks down, they were looking for. They are looking for the library, which they've been two weeks. Where them and the escorter. That means now, if maybe the escorter, I know there's nothing there. If we cannot have something, and then whether it's going to call the law or what. If anyone who bans carbon property. But there are people who are behind, especially the consent group. Because we can't charge them the consent group, because they've got no constitution. You can't sue them, they can't even sue them. If it is at a consent group, because fortunately for them, they know nothing. Whether they have got something on plan, they know nothing about that. But they are making points that they're going to ban the properties of the government. Please, if maybe we can try and then make a plan. Because I was mentioning in Mpumalanga, we see that these young boys are not drunk. There's service silver. They are paying, my question is, where they were collecting stones and all that, wherever the police? They were collecting stones and all that, but the police are there, they said now they want to cut them. Because immediately when I'll go to one example, where I'm saying that I'm done. If they're going to be a match, you apply for a match. You just go in the morning. You apply for much. You will wait until you have been given the permission to march. You can't just wake up to this morning. We're marching. Service the delivery. Secondly, Minister, we pushed from one of my constituents in there that if they are going to do the job, the partner, why they don't buy graders and all that, and do the job for themselves, instead of going to attend them. Well, what is they are doing? Because they are more advanced. They will hire, they will give the tender to a company who is in Joburg, or in KZN. Not the one which from Eastern Cape. You will see trucks from Joburg. This is where they're getting money. They won't use the contractors from Logan. They will use one from Joburg and you see the truck. Where are the truck comes from? No, the tender has been awarded to a company. A fake company. When you trace that, there's not going to be a company there. Thanks.
Thanks, honorable members. I'll just add some few minutes and then I'll give over to you for responses. Minister, you made mention on some of the interventions on SONA, which have already wanted to come up with another intervention of IMISA. I just want to check a difference. Maybe they have a different role or function between IMISA and CN Zamanje project. This question has been raised in one of our portfolio committee meetings. I'm raising it now because with IMISA you've got some, you are almost through on its preparations, and there's already some experts that are in place that you. I just want to check what is the relationship or the working together of the project of CN Zamanje. And also, Chair, I just want to check on the Khoisan issue to integrate them with, to be integrated in our government mainstream. I don't know whether, because yesterday I was listening to a talk show which responded to Honorable Melda's debate. So I just want to check on Minister's side, is it possible maybe, because it was on our oversight, we are saying we are going to take them into consideration and put them in our government mainstream, but on the other side, is there anyone around South Africa whom can come up and say, in this place, there are so many Khoisan people occupying this land? So I just want to check from the minister, from census side. Fortunately, we had a census. Maybe is it possible that we can get how many of them, where are they located, and which category they are put in? In yesterday's debate, they were put in a category of being blacks. So in census form, I just also want to know which category they are put on. I'm staying in Gertsebang, in Emelo, whereby 30 kilometers to Grootsmeer, where I'm staying. I've learned from that talk show that there are number of Khoisan people who stayed there for many years. They've got the land. It's a heritage site whereby international people used to visit that place. I'm staying 30 kilometers away from that place, and I didn't even know about their existence. So, Minister, I just want to check maybe on those issues. Maybe if we can, before put them into program, maybe we'll do it, it will be oversighted maybe, and focus mainly on Northern Cape. Good, most of them are found in Northern Cape, only to find that they are all over in the country. Each and every province has got them, so that we'll be able to integrate them and take them into all of them into consideration. Thanks, Minister. Over to you, maybe for responses.
Thank you very much, and thanks to honorable members. How far are we? That's the first question. How far are we in the fight against corruption, more especially most prevalent in supply chain instances? Where you deal with tendering, and also issues around the outsourcing of services, including in some areas where you even talk about outsourcing of cleaning services. Now, how far do you go in terms of job creation when all these things are taken out? Even as far as fighting corruption, more especially in areas around the supply chain, what is it that COFTA that would then say we might want to then put our finger on? Because if you're projectizing our response, means that you need to identify deliverables and set yourself in motion to address those things. What is it that we suggest we need to do? We have indicated that we don't see ourselves having to enter the terrain and of competition, where, for instance, knowing that there is a multiple agency working group that deals in this area led by Treasury, knowing that there is a public service anti-corruption unit led by DPSA, not knowing that we have quite a number of our Chapter 8 institutions created to fight corruption, knowing that the police are there, other units there, the ICD, knowing that we have the SIU, knowing that there are quite like, if you like, a number or a plethora of entities, knowing that the there are times you find that people may even ignore that. But you find that that actually reaches a situation where people sometimes resolve to take the law into their own hands because they believe that you're not actually doing enough. As from a COCTA point of view, how do you deal with this issue? And it goes far. That's why with MZ, we need to sharpen our intervention to deal with these issues. Now, of course, the Community Works Program is one of the interventions that we're not saying is the answer to fight poverty. It came in as an improvement on the EPWP, program, the Extended Public Works. To them say, when you look at the EPWP, actually this is phase two of it. To them say, when you look at EPWP, you then say you create jobs and then link to the construction of a road. The construction of a road is a project that starts from one end to the other. Yes, it's true that you have provided that intervention for that short period of time. How do you actually talk about sustainability? Because for those people who participate in the program, for that time period, they see benefits out of that. Yes, it is not benefits that we can all go out and then say we have reached a state of better life for all, as if that is the end stage in as far as where we would like to. But then the CWP was created just to provide some sort of permanence in dealing with short-term interventions, the relief mechanism. When we speak about poverty, and then so you fight poverty, we identify stages, mitigate the negative effect of poverty. That is where you deal with your grants and stuff like that, reduce the impact. But at the end of the day, you fight poverty when everybody, all the people that are employable are actually getting jobs. So it's a process of them dealing with those things. So in a way, the sort of permanence that you provide through the CWP to the EPWP program comes in handy to deal with those issues, but it's not a substitute to finding permanent employment for those people we're actually looking at. When you go back to the supply chain, the procurement area, we passed an act of parliament, if I'm not mistaken, it was in 2000, the PPFPA, abbreviated Promotion of Preferential Procurement Framework Policy Act, and the regulations were later developed to deal with these issues of ANSI. If you were to stick to this, you'll find that as we deal with procurement, we'll then be empowering the local suppliers so that you don't find a situation where somewhere in Taung a school fence is to be built and you go and buy material from a supplier who is based in Centre. Now, how do you then sustain the local business people? Because by mere fact of supporting them through the PPFPA, that is why actually the PPFPA was created. You are strengthening the backbone of these local suppliers. That at the end of the day, the people, even if they employ two or three, they will actually sustain that kind of environment. We need to deal with these issues. Anarchy during the strikes, we need to address these issues. Do we intend passing an act to discourage the destruction of poverty for residents? Let me indicate that such acts exist. All what needs to be done is enforcement. If you find, even a simple thing that you find, people will go to the extent of saying you embark on an unauthorized connection of you do that, you are actually vandalizing the water supply infrastructure. You really can be charged for that. What are we doing to make sure that those things are actually enforced? So it takes the enforcement of existing legislation. And that is where we need to go. But combining this also with a community awareness, we have a role to play. For instance, if we say, when you deal with corruption, you must make sure that you break all the three legs in the manifestation of corruption, the triangular structure of corruption, the environment, the corruptors and the corruptees. If you create an environment that is conducive for corruption to thrive, that environment is going to breed corruptors, and that environment is going to breed corruptees. It will set some people at a point where they believe that for them to survive, they have to respond positively to the temptations imposed upon them by corruptors. And the corruptors, if they realize that they can make a killing out of that, and there's nothing that is being done, honestly speaking, you're not caring the environment. So we need to make sure that we deal with those issues. But also, when it comes to this anarchic destruction, you find that people, they are so worried, you know, they are angry for services, they will destroy your libraries, and as they bribe the tires, they find themselves even damaging the road. I'm sorry to use the word bribe, because I know when you bribe, you put something on fire because you want to eat at the end. But in this case, it's just burning, you know, and the intention of burning is not to destroy the tires. Is to register an interest. But is that the way to go? And these people, honestly speaking, there is no one who does not spring out of a family into those actions. It's our children. They come out from our homes. If each parent will say, not with my child, I will engage my child. If it is me who says so, and my neighbor says so, and all of us then say, where will these children come from? Who will avail themselves into dealing with those things. Sometimes, like I gave an example last time, you find that some of these people find themselves promoting the agenda of adults, taking advantage of their age, promoting the agenda of adults. I gave an example, you know, I always use this example, and people laugh. When we're dealing with a, you know, xenophobic attack, and it's a reality. There was one young man, very young, I think below 12 or 10, where he was involved and actually was going around, you know, victimizing and attacking this people. But why are you fighting these people, young men? The young man says, no, they are taking our wives. And that young man, honestly speaking, if it is true that somebody is robbing people, that person should say they are taking our mothers. Now, once you say that, you can see that this person is promoting the agenda of somebody, and that somebody is an adult. Let's go all out. The challenge that we are putting is that we are saying, you know, when I was in public service, talking about the issue around the strike, more especially that gets to be destructive, I then said, let's place at the center a concept of saying, my public servant, my future. How do we actually deal with these things? Because at that level, we're dealing with people. I was dealing with a public servant, and I opened the communication, online communication, for people to raise issues that will talk about these things. We are seeing in culture, my community, my call, and we're opening a communication line where people will have to raise these issues. Let's debate these issues. Let business formations, let organs of civil society, let ourselves as individual parents and stuff like that, let's take responsibility and try to engage with this. Just take one practical example. And I think between now and sometimes, maybe we should take one of the cases where we had perception that we just talk and talk, but the more we talk, it's like the more things are happening. It can't be business as usual. We have to do something about it. I'm not saying that, as I say, we need to do something about it. I'm suggesting that there's nothing that's been done. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is that we need to do more. There is room for improvement in as far as our dealing with these issues. You know, the situation as we discussed in the Northwest and the associated suspicions around the what's happening, we have a report and are committed to engage closely with the Premier to then deal with the situation in the Northwest for what it takes. We need to do that. Not only there, but everywhere. You know, there is an act. There is an act of Parliament. It is the problem that you pass legislation, you're in power, you need to rise the level of making sure that you create a conducive environment for the application of such acts, such as the protection of whistleblowers. You know, there is a Protected Disclosures Act. Protected Disclosures Act starts from within, that people cannot be victimized for raising some of the issues. These things, if you are in a distance, you think that it doesn't happen. These things happen. Get closer and then see as to, and let's make noise about it. People come out to the open, and let's be seen to be dealing with these issues. I think we need to look at this. Otherwise, it will be business as usual. And mine is that we shouldn't make it as business as usual. And we need to actually do it. Now, even as we do an oversight, you honorable member asked, what is the oversight roadmap? That, you know, when you go to an area, what are the common questions in the fight against corruption that when you go to a local area, you need to raise? I want to indicate that our positioning as far as the repositioning of what used to be called a anti-corruption inspectorate in COPTA is meant to deal with the issues. We must come with an arrangement, like, you know, in the environment where you deal with general issues for people to know. You know that there is a manual that is produced, a paralegal manual. You open the paralegal, even when an act is passed, that addresses some of the issues that the paralegal manual has. It keeps on being updated. So that when you go out and to empower the communities to understand as to what is going on around them and what they may have to do given a certain development, the paralegal manual comes handy to deal with that. We need a COPTA through that new mechanism that we're talking about to come out with a frequently raisable question in as far as fighting. If you go in on an oversight and you want to deal with issues of fighting corruption, there must be key questions that will then say we need to look at that. And thanks for raising that issue, if one would remember, because that then says to me, thinking on our feet, we need to do something about that. Otherwise, we just join the bandwagon, join the chorus. Like I said last time, you know, everybody talk about what to be in public. Everybody knows about it. How far do you know? No, I know it. In our province, we even have a choir. You can sing what to be in the key. If that's a choir, we must be seen on the ground. And we must be seen getting our hands dirty in the fight against corruption. Ask even difficult questions. Even difficult questions that you think that sometimes some will say, hey, you know, asking this question is career limiting. It's nothing career limiting. I mean, if you say it's career limiting for me to raise these issues, who told you that I'm here only for that particular career you're talking about? Let's get out of, you know, a state of being reserved ourselves and be seen to be hands-on dealing with these issues. And that's the call that one is making, honestly speaking. And if it is done by one, it's done by two, it's done by three, if it's done by 100, I can assure you, there will be delivery. Very good instrument part. If you read the act itself, you say, yeah, how do we get wrong in a situation where you have the act like this? Not only one act, of course. So many of them. We need to do that. Now, That is what, and the idea for doing that was to make sure that you don't get either officials or ourselves accused of a political stage management, because you actually leave that to a full public participation, all societal involvement. We may want to look at that if there are shortcomings. What I raised about political parties, more especially in the issues around traditional leaders, I was raising that point, more especially when it comes to the politicization. You know, we are transforming the institution. No doubt about it. We have got some challenges. Take, for instance, in the area of headmen and headwomen. You know that we have the commission whose responsibility it is to deal with issues of the remuneration. But the issue is that how many traditional leaders, junior traditional leaders, or called the headmen, headwomen, Izinduna, or anything that we call it, how many are they today? And you know, at all times that I address people, I say, as we are speaking now, there is a possibility that there is one headman who is being installed. Great possibility. And as we are speaking now, there is a possibility that one is being deposed. You talk of about, so far the figures we have, about 7,399. But then how do you actually, in some areas, you find that in some areas, you are a headman appointed, and there is a geographic area that you have to look after. Kunla from here up to there, that's your area. In some areas, you don't necessarily get allocated to a geographic area. You are allocated to a function. You see, you are going to be a headman responsible for making sure that the first moon is celebrated. You are headman responsible for disasters in the area. So it's function-based. How do you actually deal with that kind of a situation? But you find political parties or some politicians, that's the point of it. You find that they want to actually create like a union type of an approach in the minds of our traditional leaders. Demand, 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 demand. That is the issue I was discouraging. And we have to keep on discouraging, because that is pure opportunism. People know that there is a process going on. But then we'll then say, no, you see, let's demand, let's demand. Is it, the same applies to so-called consent groups. Many a times you'll find that these consent groups will go for the cheaper and the easy to accept reason for them starting at that. And not at all times will they put clear exactly what they are looking at. This person wants to be elected, but you can't go outside elections to say I'm popularizing myself in preparation for the upcoming elections. You must go around and say there's no service delivered, so that when the time comes, people will remember, oh, this is the one who led us on this 1, 2, 3. So that's actually, look at, that was the politicization that I was talking about. Mitha, in terms of deployment, that we need to look at the problematic areas, we need to come with a profile in terms of what is for obtaining at the moment. I think we'll find, we'll look at that, we'll present a detailed written report in terms of how we are dealing with that. If we achieve 30% of the impact that we are talking about here, we will stand to be commended. That's a very good target set. And what one will indicate is that let's continue projectize work in engagement like this so that we achieve this. How does COCTA promote and entrench intergovernmental relations? If you look in terms of Chapter 3 of the Constitution, it's very clearly spelled out in terms of how we go about it. There are principles of intergovernmental relations. We even establish legislation to deal with intergovernmental relations. COCTA has to come to the center. We need to monitor and evaluate the role that you say, for instance, identify some departments and say, these are key departments. governed the environment and governed by the principal law of the land, the Constitution. And there are enabling legislations that are following up to facilitate the implementation of what the Constitution demands. Those are the tools that we need to use to entrench ourselves as dealing with these issues, as we deal with transversal issues. And of course, a fallback mechanism. What fallback mechanism in terms of non-compliance? That is what we have to come to the party. We have to cooperate, that we have to provide support, provide an environment for support, to work very closely and stuff like that. But what do we do in case of you try all these things and you get into a situation, more especially in a situation where people will say, this is my municipality, no one will say anything about it. This is my department, no one will say anything about it. Where's Cocktail, Salga, so what? We need to actually sense based on our mandate to deal with these issues. Of course, the sector education and training authorities have to come. We have to like sort of work closely with them to make sure that we build the skills required. There is the LG sector, local government sector, which is close to us. It's LG sector, it's C sector. But actually all the other 20-odd sitters, we need to look at that in terms of out so that we build capacity with things that would be in a position to take our youth out of mischief. The issue about the duplication, if we understand the mandate, that there will really be no duplication. But you see, where you find some sort of duplication is then they will operate in one environment, all of us having to promote the same objective. It's like there's duplication, but there's also distinctiveness in terms of what actually is supposed to be done by which organ. Of course, concerned groups don't have a juristic person status. You can't sue them, they can't sue. But how do we deal with this? How do we deal with this issue? These concerned groups come from the communities that we're providing. What is our TSUs doing? Technical support unit, they're cocked. Instead of them getting into the field of play and see themselves doing their work as if they are operating from within offices, what are they actually doing in terms of the society itself? SALGA comprised of leaders who are drawn from the societies, and this is where these concern groups come from. Stakeholder mobilization. How to then do so that you must know if there's a breakaway. For instance, you know, you find that a person from the concern group, say this person is the member of one existing organization, say SAMCO or Repair Association, I'm a member of this, go to elections, contest elections, get defeated, but this person still wants to lead, form a concern group. It's easier to form a concern group. But let me tell you, what we can do to pull out the carpet so that there is no favorable condition for the emergence of concern groups is to empower the people. How do we empower the people? Get the people to know. What counselors are doing their work? Making sure that they inform the people. Political leaders like members of parliament, there is no portion in this country. There's no portion of piece of land that is not under the area of a constituency of a member of parliament. Let's get these people. Let's get people to know. If you get the people to know, you are empowering the people. And there's nothing wrong. There's nothing wrong if, for instance, an MP, members of this portfolio committee or other, they are going to their area to do constituent work and then say, Cocktail, we want you to facilitate in the spirit of cooperative governance. I'm going to my constituency. Get all the other partner departments that you have. I'm going to my area. We're going to deal with the thing. Talk to us. We'll facilitate that is possible. Let's get the people to know what is going on around them. If they know what's going on around them, they will be empowered. They will not be available to be easily taken for a ride and as if there's anything of serious concern when in actual fact a personal interest. That is all about. Mr. and Sienza Manji. At the moment, MISA, we are about to finalize MISA as as a government component. Senza Manje was a program, or is a program, that was run, Treasury greatly involved, the Development Bank of Southern Africa greatly involved, us coming in also to be involved. We are now ring-fencing infrastructure support mechanism, creating a vehicle that deals with, firstly, perform an audit. What sort of municipal infrastructure do we have? What is their status? Not just an ordinary audit that goes through the eye, not through the eye of the nation. That goes through, just looking at it and then draw a conclusion that this is a thing. Do a professional assessment. That's where these engineers are actually doing the professional assessment, where do we stand and what needs to be done. And how do we empower those who have to work with this infrastructure? How do we empower them to actually understand what it is that they have to do? So that is the situation. That is where we are. As I take just 5 minutes next break, the DG will be talking about the Khoisan issue, the issue that you raised, Chairperson. I'll come and join later on. Thanks.
Then did you come in?
Yes.
Khoisan was the categories of Khoisan, and we have 5 categories. And there was also the issue of database of the Khoisan communities. We have the 5 categories of Khoisan to start with. We have the Khoi, we have the San, we have the Korana, we have the Khrikos and Nama, and they are spread across the country. In terms of the database, I'll have to try and gather some database from State South Africa, and we'll provide that. And one of the things we are told that, in terms of the question, the traditional leadership over many years, they get appointed into traditional leadership. They don't inherit, whereas the other communities, inherit this traditional leadership. In that sense. So, but in terms of the information, they do not have land. They have been displaced, and hence, in the amendment of the National Traditional Affairs Bill, we are no longer saying in order to qualify to be a traditional leader, you need to have a piece of land, because we know that they do not possess land. There are some of them that are leaders, who have their members outside of their area of jurisdiction, in that sense. So we will try and get information from State South Africa just to get the numbers. We know that when we were consulting them during the deal process, when we covered 29 towns and regions, it was the most difficult thing to reach out to all the areas. We estimated the kilometers that were traveled, if my memory serves me well. It was 18,000 kilometers that was rounded. We had plan A and plan B. Initially we thought we'd go to these regions and get them maybe bust into an area that is convenient so that we can get them in one area. So they are sparsely populated, especially in Northern Cape. So, but I know that we probably would get information that can indicate that in Northern Cape, what are the numbers. And in Western Cape, but of course that's where they are mostly concentrated. But, in all the provinces, in Mpumalanga, they are there. Eastern Cape, we do have them. In Gauteng as well. We do have. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Th Thanks, Honourable Members. That's the briefing. Hoping maybe it will give us the way forward on advancing in response of the State of the Nation address on paying attention on the Khoisan people. But I think it doesn't end there, because we need to know maybe a full-fledged presentation on the progress made, maybe in 2 months, 3 months' time to come, on the progress made by the department. Mama, you want to come in? Yes.
And I've got a question to ask about the Khoisan. So you made mention of Gregoire Khanaro.
Why am I out of order?
You made mention of Gregoire the Khanamas. What I would like to get clear is, do they have different traditional leaders, or do they fall under one traditional leader? Is the Khanamas got its own traditional leader, the Gregoire's own traditional leader? That's the question that I would like to find out.
Did you make, before you want to come in?
My concern is, you know, the intermarrying is throughout. You cannot get a pure Khoisan again. It's similar to Australia with Aboriginals. Everybody has a strain of blood in them. How do you find a Khoisan? There have been thousands of them, probably up to a million, would have a strain of Khoisan blood in them. How are you going to deal with situations like that?
Thanks, Honorable Chair. I think in terms of the leadership structures, at the moment we are also confronted by, you would find the Khoi group, you know, some people in Western Cape would say, no, we are the rightful leaders. Those ones in Northern Cape, they are not. And they go to another area, they say, no, we are, and then even calling themselves, they say, we are the Bushmen. When we think that is derogatory, then they say, we are the right ones, this is how we want to be called. So we do have those issues like that. For example, if you look at the Griquas, most of them are concentrated in Western Cape. Some of them refer to them, for example, we have Adam Koch, the fifth, you know, referring to himself as a king of the Griquas. But the issue is that there will be a process when the bill is finalized, that is the process that is proposed, which indicates that there will be an advisory structure where they're going to submit their claims, like the Chapel Commission. And there will be people with expertise that would look at, you know, the historical trend of each and every one of them that are bringing their claims, to say, you know, whether they qualify to be a chieftaincy or kingship, you know, in that sort of sense. So I think that is the question that Honourable Member.
So the second one on intermarriages, how are you going to add or identify on that one? Because now there is a mixture of them.
Thanks, Honourable Chair. On a lighter note, the person that was chairing the National Council and so on, you know, when one looks at him and so on, you know, it becomes very difficult, because there's no sign that shows that, you know, it comes from the lineage of the Khoi people, and so on. So I think they are genuine. You know, we are able to distinguish between the five categories that I talked about. You know, the Griquas, you know, the real Griquas, you can actually be able to identify them. And the Nama as well, in the way they dress and so on, you are able to distinguish them. But when you come to Gauteng, a number of them that come to talk to us and say they are Khoisan, you know, you look at them and it becomes very difficult. I think this is where there will be a lot of mixture and so on. But the pure Khoisan groups are in Northern Cape and Western Cape. That's where you still get.
But the one in my area, they are pure. Impressed me whereby they are Big Frog heritage place. They are pure even though. That's why I said I think you must collect your data and make it a show in that one. But also you said they are leadership chieftains it's not hereditary, they appoint. What is the criteria they use to appoint those people? Maybe it goes the same like the consent group. If you talk too much, then you end up being appointed. That is not on the lighter note. Yes. What if one of the kids go to university and end up in the city and don't dress anymore like the parents do anymore?
The bush ones.
Yes. And that is the reality they are. And get married and bear their own family, but the lineage is still there.
On this one, I'm not sure if the DG touched upon the role of ethnology, anthropology, and historians. Because that is where you trace origin without the use of physical appearance. Because with the development that I hear, you find that I may not, in terms of pigmentation or otherwise, display the features that otherwise you may have to look at. But a combination of the role of these actors, which is what we do, will assist in terms of dealing with these issues. You know, you remember that in provinces, for instance, in dealing with, because the complication is not only in the state, but it's also on traditional leadership in areas outside the Khoisan community. For instance, in the province of Limpopo, I remember they used somebody was a qualified anthropologist and a lawyer. The late Dr. Alusha. Now you look at actually getting those people. That's why it's so helpful that to actually get a person may claim like even now. Even now you have people in townships who say I'm a traditional leader. Who are you leading? Where is your community? Say no, my community. You can't identify them in geographic terms to say they exist in a particular area. It's possible in this street where I am, there may be so and so. Wait for me to convene my people, then you'll see. And they raise very important arguments. They will say, for instance, how do you know that these people are members of the Methodist Church? They won't show any time, just give me that time. Let's go to church, come to my church on a Sunday, then you'll see who my people are. And some actually even raise this thing. So the issue is compliance with the baseline in terms of definition, and that is where you then mobilize and then according to historical anthropology and ethnology terms, this is where you then bring together and then say this is what we do.
Wanted to come in?
Yes, I just wanted to comment on intermarriages that. According to me, I don't see intermarriages, you know, destroying the lineage of chieftaincy. We are the Bafurutsi Bakwena, we intermarry, but the chieftainships of Bakwena Bafurutsi remains the same. The chieftainship can only change if daughters of kings and chiefs then are married by members of other ethnic groupings or members of other races. Because let's say a Pakistanian comes and marries our chairperson who is the daughter of a king. Yes. The offspring. Exactly. And he will become a king because she is a queen and she gave birth to the son who is going to be the king in that community, in that community, yes. But now we have, in that way we have destroyed the lineage of chieftainship, because now our chieftainship can be traced from Pakistan, no longer in Limpopo.
Thanks for the explanation. I think, members, if there are no any follow-ups that they want to come in.
Chair, my mind is just to ask from the department now, of course. The president has said he would like to be advised, because there are a lot of these entities from the department, all of them. What are we saying to our own entities? Do we need this, so that we can tell the president, do we still need these entities we are having here?
That is a response called upon commission that we might want to look at these things across the board. Parliament also looked at some of the state entities. A former member of parliament, former minister, Kadasman, was assigned to look at some of the state entities, our chapter 9 and associated, which include, when it comes to associated, which also include the Public Service Commission, which is chapter 10. Parliament is processing the finalization of the recommendation by the ad hoc committee led by former member of parliament, late Kala Asman. That's an indication that when it comes to issues of entities, for their operation as we use them, we have to actually use them and look at the dispensation as a living arrangement. That if we have to effect and strengthen in some areas, you may want to do that. So it's true. There is these issues. Now, when it comes to the ethics officers, their employment, obviously reporting and management, when we raise this issue, we base our argument on the public sector integrity framework, which has been developed by the Department of Public Service and Administration, which then brings together the code of conduct for municipal workers, bring together the code of conduct for public servants, but also goes further to talk about issues of a ethics management. Then at that space, then create a position of ethics officers. But what is indicated there, which is worthy to be emulated, is a situation that you then say these ethics officers, as you create a dispensation for them, you don't want to sound like saying you adopt a holier-than-thou kind of an approach. You then say we are all partners in this whole issue. But let's be organized. So how do you protect this fear, which is a qualified fear, a very correct fear? How do you protect ourselves from this issue? It's a question of a reporting lines management. There are two approaches to deal with a reporting lines management, where you talk about a dotted line a management and a solid line management. It's a dual a reporting arrangement. Then see, on a solid line, that is where you then see the attainment of the key objectives is located within that particular organ where the solid line links with the ethics officer. But the dotted lines will then be linking with the authority for purposes of providing issues like resourcing, day-to-day like a supervision and stuff like that. Overall accountability being to the organ in terms of the solid line. If we again take this forward, we'll then see solid line linked with the chief ethics officer and counter, dotted line linked with the municipality concerned. So you have got this dual mechanism. That then takes you forward to then say we are all together into this, but then there is no silo. We don't have this silo mentality. We are all together, so you are not alone. We will then deal with the thing. There is no way if that arrangement can survive or succeed. There is no way where you find that the possibility of manipulation may exist, you are then clear that you will have an environment that you can effectively utilize. Of course, we can't leave it to chance. We have to also build in our instruments of performance management. We have to put it there to then set measurement tools and management arrangements, where as you do that, you will also bring on board peer assessment as part of that. We can elaborate, we can unpack this going forward. But this is the thinking that we think can assist in as far as taking us forward to make sure that these ethics officers are the responsible also to compile registers. If we agree, because the framework says, because it was still a draft, the framework was saying, on the one hand, do you want to continue with a dispensation where you allow your municipal workers, if we can talk about municipal, where you allow your municipal workers to have interest in private business, and they declare at the end of the day, those who are supposed to do that. If you so say, how do you manage such disclosure? And how do you deal with public perception that disclosure has become a shield for a self-enrichment, taking advantage of people's strategic location in municipalities? So if that is the way to go, then the framework will then say, find a way of managing that. Make it a point that the register will be published like, you know, the register of members' interest here in Parliament. Why, if it can be done for MPs, why can't it be done for municipal workers? That's a simple and straightforward issue. So how you actually deal with these things? When we coined this mechanism, we're actually taking a cue of what is happening here in Parliament. But if you say no completely, municipal worker, no interest in business. Some will say, no, you can have interest in business, but that entity must not be doing business with the municipality. I think we amended the Systems Act to take care of that aspect. Now, having done so, it's just that we still have to finalize the regulations. To them, how do you then enforce compliance with that and act on non-compliance? These are the things that these ethics officers will come handy to deal with such issues, because you will not be like a roll of a thumb looking around who's doing what. They will then be in a position to deal with this thing. So that is as far as the double reporting mechanism that we think, dotted line, solid line, to protect our interests in as far as the ethics officers are concerned, whilst recognizing the legitimate responsibilities of the different spheres in dealing with these issues.
Minister, honorable members, thanks for the interaction and the presentation from the department, hoping that some loopholes will improve along the way of presentation documents. When we receive them, we'll improve along the way. But we had a fruitful discussion for today. Members, that brings us to the end of today's meeting. There's something that I forgot. Thank you.
Thank you.